had a good day, good time, good life, good home, good job, good wife. You're right on time for a bad movie night. You've had a shitty day, shitty job, no life, broken home.
Welcome to the first episode of the Bad Movie Night podcast of the 2014 year.
Hey now.
Hey.
Fuck 2013.
Oh, Nosley.
Yeah.
So on today's episode, we are we're going to be sitting down with writer, director, actor, producer, man of many talents.
Novelist.
Jose Prendes, who is most recently wrote Mega Shark versus Mecha Shark, which is the third installment of the Mega Shark series that will be coming out produced by The Asylum. In the near future, it actually comes out at the end of January, so we'll be sitting down and talking with him about his career and the production of Mega Shark versus Mecha Shark and his other projects, which are also very exciting, so stay tuned for that. And then after that, we will be reviewing our another Versus movie. We'll be reviewing Godzilla versus Mothra, which is, I believe,
a classic.
A classic. And
I believe it could be a classic. I believe it could be.
And the oldest movie we've reviewed to date, I believe. Because I think Barbarella was the oldest one before
Godzilla versus Mothra. Late 60s or early 70s.
Yeah.
This is 64.
Yeah. So we'll be sitting down and taking a look at Godzilla versus Mothra. But first, if you want to contact us, you can email us at podcast@badmovienight.com. That's NITE.com. You can also follow us on Twitter at badmovienightcom, all one word. Also on Facebook at facebook.com/badmovienightcom. And you can find all of the news, reviews, anything bad movie related you need to find at badmovienight.com. And yeah, so without further ado, let's jump right into our interview with Jose Prendes. All right, we are here with Jose Prendes. I hope I'm saying that right.
You are.
A man of many, many talents. He is a writer, a director, a actor, a producer, a special effects supervisor.
Not really. That was. No one else could do it. It was on my first movie. I'm like, well, I'm doing it.
Yeah. Put the credits on there. Shit. And you've composed. You've edited. There's pretty much nothing on the production side that you haven't done.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, if you're making indie movies, that's kind of what you have to do.
Wear lots of hats.
Yeah.
You're pretty independent on your own. Mm-hmm.
Pleasure to be here, by the way.
Oh,
thank you for having me.
Thank you for gracing us with your presence. Jose's here to basically talk, first and foremost, about the newest Asylum movie that is due out. What's the release date of it?
January 20-something.
It's going to premiere on Sci-Fi then?
I think so. Okay. I've heard different things. I think it's actually coming to DVD first.
Gotcha. Oh.
Which is weird. And then somebody told me it's going to Sci-Fi in the summer.
Okay.
Which I don't know how that tracks because it's usually Sci-Fi first.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm not sure.
I don't know if I mentioned the movie yet, but we're talking about Mega Shark versus Mecha Shark. And that's not Mecca,
like,
as in where
the
Muslims
Holy Land.
Pray to.
Yeah.
That is Mecca as in mechanical.
That's part four.
That's what I said. We have to come up with that movie.
Yeah.
So this is the third installment of the Mega Shark franchise. There was Mega Shark versus Giant Octopus,
right.
Mega Shark versus Crocosaurus, and now Mega Shark versus Mecha Shark. So we will definitely be talking about that because we're all very curious to know
everything that went into the making
of Mega Shark versus Mecha Shark. But let's start off a little bit earlier. So you're originally from Venezuela, right?
I was born there.
You're born there.
My parents are Cuban, and my father was a political prisoner, actually.
No way.
So he met my mom when he was in jail. And when he got out,
Was your mom in jail too?
She was not. Oh. She was actually because she was visiting a cousin of hers.
So
she met him there.
Love happens in the strangest of places.
Yeah, exactly. When he got out of jail, I guess I was conceived, and they decided to not have me live in Cuba, which was pretty nice of them.
Good idea.
Right.
So they were gonna hopefully have me be born in Miami, which is where I've lived for most of my life. But I guess they had to stop in Venezuela for some reason, and they were delayed, and
always
I was born.
Always do. You always have to stop in Venezuela.
Yeah, might as well. So I was born there, but I was really only there for maybe 6 months.
Oh.
Okay.
And then I've lived most of my life in Miami.
Okay.
So.
And so were you – so how did you get started in filmmaking?
you know, I was an only child. Mm-hmm. So early on, movies, you know, have always been like a brother and sister to me, and I've always just kind of gravitated towards that.
Cool.
You know, in reading and things
I
like that.
I can absolutely relate to that.
You know, yeah. I mean, there was something magical about it. Like, it spoke to me. And, right. You know, my dad was a big collector of movies. At that time, it was pretty much – VHS was still like $100, like if you wanted to buy a new one.
What?
So he would like tape shit off of HBO and
yes.
Showtime.
$100.
And that's
yeah.
I remember
in like a 25 cent.
Oh yeah, exactly.
For free.
It's yeah. Like I remember Terminator 2 came out on VHS. I'm like, oh dad, let's buy it. But it was like $100. So I'm like, okay,
wow.
I guess we're not gonna buy it.
Wow.
But so I would watch stuff that he would tape off of HBO, and he had no restrictions. So I would like watch nudity at like 8 years old, and you know he would rent.
Being
we watched like
awesome.
Predator, Chucky, like all that
oh,
kind
yeah.
of stuff. You know, Nightmare on Elm Street. They would let me watch anything. So.
Yeah, that's how my household was,
you know.
I had free reign when I went to the video store.
Nice.
That I could check out anything from the horror section. I wasn't allowed to go past those double doors into the adult section.
The secret
right.
corner
but
of the video stores.
I think that was more store policy than a parental policy, though.
Yeah, yeah.
But,
your mom didn't.
So, yeah, so you
that's
got educated
yeah.
at a very early age in all the various genres.
Yeah, yeah.
And so... When did you start making films out in Miami?
I did, yeah.
Okay.
You know, it's weird. I reference this movie, but I don't think anyone really remembers it. And even the people who made it don't believe me when I've met them and told them. There's a movie called Transfers 2.
Oh, yeah.
Made by Full Moon.
Uh-huh.
And I remember I rented it. And it was the first thing that ever had a special features, you know, thing. You know, their videos on
the yeah,
magazine.
A lot of the,
right.
Full Moon ones had little...
They all had that. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know what it was. I'd never heard of that. So I actually thought it was a magazine you got because they said it was a video magazine. But I didn't
right.
get a paper magazine. I was like, where the fuck is my magazine?
Right.
And they said, no, it's on the tape. You wait till the end of it. So I wait till the end of it, and it's behind the scenes of the making of the movie. And it was such a blast.
Yeah.
Like, you see them joking around, having such a good time, and you see the actors being themselves, and I'm like, wow, I love this. This is what I want to do. I want to make movies. So because of those damn special features, that decided the course of my life.
I love
wow.
that Transfers
you know.
2.
Exactly. It's such a...
That's going to be great on Inside the Actor's Studio when you're
yeah.
on with James Lipton the fourth or whoever.
Yes.
It'll still be James Lipton.
He's immortal.
Cry,
yeah.
Yeah, they cryogenically freeze him after every show and thaw him out
yeah.
for the next show.
That's why he looks so fresh.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
But yeah.
Daisy.
And I've met Tim Thomerson and Charles Band, and I've told them that, and they're like, really? Like, yeah, man. And like, oh, okay.
That's
but
awesome.
That's great, you know, and so hopefully maybe one of these asylum movies will inspire somebody. I'm like, great, that's all I, you know, that's paying it forward in a way.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. So at what point did you move out to Los Angeles?
Maybe it was 2007.
Okay.
2007 with my wife, and, you know, it was one of those things where I'd made two features in Miami.
Okay.
Asylum had distributed my second one. So that's how I sort of had built a connection with them already when I was out there.
And what film was that?
It was called Corpses Are Forever.
Oh, okay.
And it was my James Bond meets zombies
thing. I was
going to
ask
thing.
If it was a James Bond style movie.
Yeah. That was really fun.
That's an awesome genre.
Yeah, yeah. It was a good time. It was a hard movie to make because I mean, we shot on 35 and I had a pretty big genre cast and I was everybody. I was
right.
line producer. I was the main actor. I was the catering. I was the driver. I did everything. It was
yeah.
exhausting.
Yeah.
So for a while, I didn't want to make movies because it almost killed me.
Right,
but
yeah.
But I, you know, I realized it's the only thing I wanted to do, and Miami isn't really the burgeoning place for film. So we moved out here, and we've been out here ever since, and I love it here. I mean, this is like – I feel like I've always lived out here. Like part of my soul has always been here.
Right.
Cool.
So I feel complete here.
Most people don't say that
yeah.
about when they like we all grew up here, but like the people
right.
who moved to LA, well,
Jeff,
especially
I
the
didn't,
ones. Oh, then fucking get out
sorry.
Of here!
Yeah, see, it's rare that I meet anybody who's actually like was born out
yeah,
here.
Yeah,
you know?
Rare
it's usually
is.
People who like kind of move out.
Yeah,
you know,
we're originally from blank, but we're here now.
Right,
that's
right.
The, what you meet most, but then everyone like who moves here always kind of shit talks it or like treats it like they're renting. LA.
Oh, no, yeah, I love it here, man.
Yeah,
yeah.
Good.
It's amazing.
Jeff.
Oh, I love it here.
No, I'm just kidding.
So by the time you moved out here, you already kind of had an established connection with,
yeah.
with David, Michael Ladd, and
yeah.
the guys over at the Asylum. So was that, so from there, from Corpses Corpses Are Forever, I see Countdown Jerusalem.
Yeah.
Was your next writing credit after that? Was that also...
yeah.
Was that your next credit? Like, was that your first credit after moving out here?
Yeah, pretty much. You know, I moved out here and basically knocked on the door and said, "Hey, I'm out here. I want to make some movies."
Remember me?
I don't know if you remember me.
What are you gonna do?
You just gotta be charming about it. Right. You can't just show up. You can't show up without pants. Oh, yeah. You know.
Wipe those tears off your face.
You have to wear pants. You can't be weird about it.
Clean shirt, that kind of stuff. But they remembered, like, "Hey, welcome," and it was really nice. You know, it was nice to be accepted. And
those guys are great over there. We Jeff and I went over there and did an interview with David Michael.
Oh, nice. Okay.
And he showed up on rollerblades and
he was having fun. He loved that. Yeah, he was having fun.
This guy is strange, but he's so witty and on top of it. And he's a fucking hilarious guy.
Really, really bizarre about the rollerblades.
Yeah.
it's like a regular thing.
He's always on rollerblades and like, "Oh, shit, David's coming because we can hear his fucking little wheels." You know? But yeah,
he's like the reincarnation of Roller Girl from.
He told us it's he has to wear so many hats during the day and be in so many places that it's the most efficient way to get around the office. Walking just takes too long.
Yeah, I bet.
So you did Countdown Jerusalem.
Yeah, it was that wasn't the point where they were doing one movie a month back then, and so they were definitely more hands on. I mean, they're still sort of hands-on, but they're more scattered now because they're doing a lot of things.
Right.
But so that's when they were doing their religious thrillers. Mm-hmm. And, you know...
Good genre again.
Yeah. You know...
that was kind of them taking off on, like, the Da Vinci Code popularity and stuff.
Well, they even did a Da Vinci Code ripoff.
Right.
So that was kind of the original idea. Yeah. And, the stuff that I've written for them, I'm never 100% happy with it because, well, to be honest, it's like you deliver something you think is a really good, like, this could be a good movie.
Right.
I think this is going to be a good movie. And then they'll take it.
Tweak it.
And then it was at that point, I don't think Lat's going to listen to this, but it was at that point where Lat would rewrite pretty much every script.
Oh, man.
So the final version of Countdown wasn't exactly the perfect version of that movie.
Right.
But then at the same time, like, they want you to write a massive billion-dollar movie, but they give the crews barely any money to make it happen.
Right.
So they have to, scramble and, like, how are we going to, like, the end of that movie had, like, a helicopter crashing into the Wailing Wall and, like, all this stuff. And that's what they wanted. Yeah. So I'm like, all right. And they wanted Jesus to show up on a horse. I'm like, all right.
I don't know. It's hard to book that, Jesus.
You know? So it's, like, stuff that obviously couldn't, they couldn't make it happen. They actually ended up shooting in Israel part of the movie, which is kind of, I just thought was kind of neat.
Yeah.
So I'm happy that it has production value, but the story is sort of a mess and...
Yeah, well, you know, there's countless times when that happens in every facet of the industry.
Yeah.
Unless you're controlling everything.
Yeah,
working in the independent sphere where you get to harvest your baby from conception all the way to the finished product.
Right.
Yeah, you wind up compromising stuff against your better judgment and against what you want to be doing. So, but it's that is the unfortunate part of the business for sure.
Yeah.
So you went on and to do a few other movies. You've done – how many movies have you done for The Asylum at this point?
I don't remember.
Like five or six?
Yeah something like that.
Hansel and Gretel.
Yeah.
Haunting of Whaley House. Haunting of Winchester House. Those are both Asylum.
Yeah. Right? Haunting of Winchester was, again, sort of a sore subject because I wrote a script that I really liked.
Yeah.
And the director threw it out and wrote his own.
Yeah.
And so I only got...
That's annoying.
It is.
It's one thing for Lat and to
I was,
do it.
Right.
He's
a producer and fine. But, and it sucks as I was trying to work with him. And like, okay, well, what do you want? And I was like, we're trying to work as a team, which is what happened with Hansel and Gretel.
Right.
Which is directed by the guy who did Sharknado. Like, before he did Sharknado, we worked together on that. So I understand as a director, if I'm handed a script, I'd like to be able to tweak it with the writer.
Right.
But yeah, this guy was like, it's not working. And he just wrote his own and...
Uh-oh.
Wow.
The movie sucks. But, with Whaley House, I actually got to take everything that I wanted to put in Winchester and put it into Whaley. And so that's my pure Asylum experience is the Haunting of Whaley House. because I got the – we shot it in Long Beach, so they left us alone. Nobody came out. Like, there were no
– Too far.
Yeah, like, all right.
Too far from Burbank.
They were, you know – They gave us notes on the dailies and things like that, and whenever we could tweak, we could. But it's stuff like we can't go back and reshoot that because we don't have time.
Right.
So
it's kind of a little bit throwback to like your truly independent days.
Right.
You were left to your own devices and got to do what you wanted.
I got to hire all my friends. The crew were all my friends, like guys who like had hung with me for years. And like, look, when I make a movie that's actually paying, you're gonna get paid.
Yeah.
And I made good on all those promises. So.
I love hearing about. Yeah. People that reward loyalty and
that's a big one, especially now, and like in this town there's so many people out to like kill each other for stuff, like
right.
If you don't have
that's
a team
sad.
You know, I would grip for anybody who gripped for me, like that's what I'll tell, that's what I tell everybody.
Yeah, that's great. That's absolutely the way it should be. I'm very curious to know about, is it Veronique
yeah. von Venom?
That's the one that caught my eye the most too,
because I don't know what that is.
Yeah,
but I want to know what it is.
It kind of feels like Elvira.
Yeah, it feels like Elvira.
Yeah, it's a it's a web series we did for YouTube with one of the actresses from Whaley House.
Okay,
she's basically a Valley Girl Elvira, and
sweet.
And so yeah, it's just like
I
a fun web series we did. Yeah, I mean that's kind of the idea. She's she was a wannabe actress.
That's awesome.
And she was fired off her public access show, and so she decided to do a web series for YouTube. And she brings on her super gay friend Frisco,
sweet.
And they review horror movies and things like that. It was just kind of a fun, silly,
that's awesome.
Literally all improv. Like I sort of gave them points, like we got to focus on these movies. Make sure you talk about this plot point, and go. And then one camera, we shoot for 5-6 minutes, and that's pretty much. We did like whole seasons in one day.
Wow.
So there's two seasons, and I'm pretty sure that's probably going to be the end of it right now.
Yeah.
But it's just a fun little thing to do between movies.
That's cool.
Yeah.
And your wife helped produce on that, correct?
Yeah.
From based on the IMDb.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's very cool. And did so tell us about let's dive into Megashark versus Mechashark.
Okay.
And can you tell us a little bit about how that project came about?
Well, it had been on the drawing boards for a long time, like always on the storyboard wall. They have a big wall of stuff they're going to do. You always saw Megashark versus Mechashark, like, up there.
Right.
And I guess they just never got around to it. And then Sharknado, who everybody at the asylum was like, oh, my God, we're making Sharknado? Like, I don't think I'm revealing anything too huge, but pretty much it was – It was kind of a troubled production.
Okay.
It was the one Asylum picture that shot, I think, about 40 days, 45
wow,
days.
Holy cow.
Yeah.
Usually you get like,
15 is the max.
Right. I was going to say, because I remember Lat was saying like a lot of them are a week.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's mostly found footage movies, though.
Oh, okay.
But like for Whaley House, we had 12, and
okay.
That was tight.
That is tight.
Yeah. So... It was a troubled production, and I know it almost killed the director. He was tearing his hair out. And then all of a sudden, it became this massive thing that people loved.
Right. Social media
Twitter.
Was a
yeah.
buzz for sure.
So, all of a sudden, they said, okay, well, let's do another shark thing. And then obviously, Mega Shark was their – at that point, it was their biggest shark hit.
Mega Shark versus Giant Octopus.
Like all the especially the first one. For some reason, it actually had fans and like
we're fans.
Oh yeah,
we saw it for a bad movie night.
Right,
nice. Yeah. Like people had like made like Mega Shark versus Giant Octopus cakes, and there was a guy who designed shoes, and like it was all over the place. So they said, "Well, let's make part 3," and I think they had developed part of it with another writer. But things didn't work out, so then they emailed me and they said, look, we're doing part 3. Would you be interested in writing it? And at the time, this was before Sharknado was huge. So at the time, I was like, I don't know, to
right.
be honest. I mean, yeah, to be honest, I don't know that I want to make a giant shark movie.
what is wrong with you, Jose?
You know, because you... I don't want to be mean, but you know what the end product's sort of going to look like.
Right.
Yeah.
And I don't –
It's
well-trodden
ground for them too.
Yeah.
It's like,
right.
You know, you're not reinventing the wheel of
exactly.
the giant shark genre
right.
in Asylum.
Which I actually got to do, which I'm happy about. Oh, but nice. I'll get into it. So I was on the fence for a little bit, and then you know, obviously as a filmmaker, you're never, especially an independent filmmaker, you're never rolling in the dough.
Right.
And you know, not that The Asylum is big bucks, but it's something, right. And it's, you know, and it's paid work, and that's always a good thing. So I said, all right, I'll do it. Yeah, I think. Yeah, that'll be fine. I'll take a crack at it. You know, it's something to keep busy. You never know. And then Sharknado hit, and I'm like, oh wow, wait a minute, this could actually be really big then. You know, because like to me, it's like, okay, well they see how big Sharknado was, maybe they'll put more money into this, and then we could actually tell a bigger, more epic kind of story. So then that kind of energized me again. And then they cut my budget.
Damn.
And I was like, why are you cutting the budget? Like, why aren't you giving us more? I just don't understand. So, and there was a lot of things that we had to, you know, to trim. I ended up doing 9 drafts for them, which is a lot.
Yeah.
How long did it take you to have to go through all those 9 drafts?
The reason they like to work with me is because I work really fast. Uh-huh. So, I mean, it was about 2 months for 9 drafts.
Wow.
And that's maybe two and a half. But yeah, I mean, I work fairly fast, but you know, we do an outline first, like a 1-page outline. Mm-hmm. Then we break it down into like 8 acts, like for like commercial breaks kind of a thing.
Right.
And there's certain beats you have to hit with every act. Like, oh, there's going to be a death. There's going to be a big set piece, blah, blah, blah. And so it's not a very organic way to make a movie.
Sure.
It's definitely very mechanical and it's tough.
Fitting.
A lot of writers – I know a couple of the silent writers like to work with the 8 act. I don't because I like to kind of make it more like let's tell a genuine story. Let's see how it actually develops. Not like, oh, okay, now they have to do this. Oh, now he has to fight over here. But, you know, you try to make it work as best you can. And so, you know, we developed it, me and the development people for a while, and then wrote the script. Then I got a lot of notes. Like there's a character I wrote into it that I thought would be great to continue the series, a character called Doctor Who, but spelled H-U. He's this, you know, Chinese industrialist.
Nice.
And I thought, well, you know, that's our big supervillain, and we can carry him on to the rest of the series. But that's one thing that I lost early on. And it's not because they didn't catch – I don't think they caught that it was Doctor Who as an inside joke. I think they just didn't want him. They just wanted –
They just hate Asian people.
It's pretty much
what
it is.
You hear it now, everybody.
Asian and midgets. They're not fans of
Who doesn't love a midget?
I know, right? What the hell? So what happened was, you know, stuff got tweaked. I had a really fun idea. My first draft I thought would have been a really fantastic movie. I mean, I think every writer thinks that. But like it had everything. It had the big epic scope. It had a really good twist. It had a really good use of the mecha. You know, basically we turn him into a nuclear submarine and he gets kidnapped, taken hostage by like by the Koreans, and then they have to find a way to use the mega to fight the mecha, and you know, and there was a baby mega shark that it's in danger, and like, well, that's why Mega's fighting him to keep the baby safe. They're like, lose the baby. I'm like, oh man, but the baby's so good. The audience would care about
that's the emotional core.
Right. They don't like emotional core.
Yeah, no, they don't.
That's one of those things that's like, it's such a little thing. Like I was talking to you about that before, and it's like such a little thing we could just throw in there, and the audience would go, oh, that was nice.
Yeah.
I'm kind of connected to that, you know? But no. They
no connection.
Like in the original draft, I think Mecha shows up in like the 5th act, like in the middle of the movie, like, okay, now we need to do this. But now it's like, no. In the beginning, we need to see Mecha in the beginning. Like so the government just goes, you know what we should do? Giant shark, metal one. Let's do it. part of those 9 drafts is kind of making it all click as best as we can.
Right.
Which is hard.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's frustrating, especially when it's like we need a draft by tomorrow, and you're working overnight, which I'm okay with. I mean, I can do that. But trying to fit all these puzzle pieces together, and then getting different notes that, you know, clash with each other, and like, well, who do I listen to?
Yeah.
Who do I say? Well, maybe he's not on the right track. Maybe it's more in keeping with this. So
sounds challenging.
It was.
Yeah. It's difficult.
It's so a lot of the people who think Asylum movies are just kind of written overnight and like thrown out there, they're not.
Right.
But I think the reason that they kind of feel very sloppy is because
There's so many different people.
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah, yeah.
And like even myself, like by eighth draft, I forgot what was in there and what was out. And and you know, they were like, okay, we're rushing into production. We need this and this and this. Like, oh man, all right. So I would just go in and like piecemeal the changes. I'm like, okay, I hope this connects to this because I don't remember if I left that in or if that's over here. And sometimes you don't have time to just read through it one more time and, you know, and make sure it all, you know, bundles together. And then even on set.
Right.
I mean, I delivered a 100 and – I don't even know what it was. Maybe a 106-page script, which is fairly standard for what Asylum shoots. But they still came, you know, came out short.
Uh-huh.
And it's mostly because – there's not enough time to shoot everything.
Right.
So the director had to go in and, like, add some scenes to add length and stuff like that. So there's a lot of stuff in there that's not mine, which I'm okay with, but, you know.
We'll try to figure out which ones are Jose's and are not.
It's bad dialogue.
Good answer. It's not
good. Sorry, I love you, Emil. You're the best, man.
Pectoral edges are now reinforced titanium, fatigue, intermediate alloy steel.
Targeting system activated.
Anything goes wrong down there.
This is a job of a lifetime.
Burn the son of a bitch out of the water!
Admiral, this is Dr. Emma McNeil. If you don't find this guy a date really soon, you're gonna have one really aggressive beast on your hands.
Got us a big-ass fish to catch.
No!
This is Dakota 1007.
Well, so again, it comes out on DVD and VOD, I'm assuming, too, probably, right? And end of January, 27th-ish, somewhere.
Yeah, right? I know, are we going to get a chance to talk about the book?
What book?
Oh, well, good. Then this will be good.
We are horrible researchers.
I didn't know there was a book.
So, around the time, I'm going to backtrack.
Okay.
So. Yes, it does come out sometime at the end of January. I don't really have all the details with me. I want to say the 27th or the 28th. Whatever. You guys can find it. Google
just
it.
Google Megashark versus Megashark.
Google that, yeah. So anyway, so when I, you know, after when Sharknado hit and I was working on Megashark, I'm a novelist and I love writing and I love being able to work in the long form. And so I approached the Asylum. I was like, hey, would you guys be interested in if I reach out to some publishers for maybe a Sharknado novel or a novel spinoff? And they were like, well, you know, we'll see. They kind of hemmed and hawed, and never got a straight answer. But I still reached out to publishers just in case to say, hey, these people are interested.
Sure.
Quirk Books was interested. You know, the people who did Pride and Prejudice and Zombies and
stuff
like that. So they were interested. But, like, the thing is, we sort of – I was kind of hoping to do kind of an Asylum schedule type of thing with the book. Like, you know, we shoot Mega Shark in August. It comes out in January. Like, that kind of really – short time period, so
right.
So I needed a publisher that could do that, and I found one in Curiosity Quills. They're a small kind of they do e-books, they do physical books. They're getting into Barnes & Nobles now, which is really great.
Oh, cool.
Because that's really tough for small publishers.
Yeah.
But I reached out to them, and they loved the idea of a Sharknado novel and possibly a mecha novel as well. I reached out to Asylum again. They didn't get back to me. So I said I contacted the publisher, and I said, well, how about this? How about we make up our own? And I mock-bust. I mock-bust Sharknado in novel form.
Wait, you're mock-busting the mock-buster?
I am, yes. The mock-busting company. but in a literary fashion.
Yeah, yeah.
And they said, okay, what do you have in mind? And I go, what about Sharkano? And
yes.
And they're like, I love it. Let's do it. What's the plot? I go, I'll get back to you. And,
isn't it obvious?
What do you think the plot is?
So basically, it's the end of the world. These three massive volcanoes have erupted all over, like, you know, in different parts around the globe. And they start spewing these lava sharks.
Oh boy!
And they're made of magma, and they're fucking hell sharks, dude. And it's, they're basically bringing it's the first part of what I've called the Sharkpocalypse trilogy.
Nice.
And so I sent this to them, and they're like, "Great, when can we have it by?" And I'm like, "How soon?" I was like, "How soon can we get it published in January? You know, to come out with Mecha?" And they're like, "Yeah, no problem." So I basically wrote a 400-page book in like 2 months.
Wow!
You need to work fast. I mean, when I'm motivated, yeah. you kind of have a golden idea,
you know? Like Sharkano.
And so I have a novel called Sharkano. It's coming out in January.
Awesome!
It'll be. Thank you.
That's great.
It's coming out January 24th. I remember that release date.
And is this your first published novel?
It's my second. My second. The first one was sort of. It was a smaller publishing house, but it came out I think in 2000. It's no longer in print, but Sharkano will definitely be the biggest one.
Nice.
Awesome.
And
very exciting.
And yeah, it's funny. I learned from the Asylum. A lot of their movies are, especially the mockbusters, they like to say they're timed to the release of blank and blank.
Right.
I've timed this to the release of Mecha Shark. So for whatever publicity Mecha Shark gets, I'm gonna pitching Sharkano.
Yeah, they've taught you well.
Yes. I mean, man, nowadays it's really just about getting the word out there and you know, and spreading the good word. And what I wanted to do with Sharkano, which is like what I couldn't do with Mecha Shark, and what really couldn't happen with Sharknado, is tell a balls out, you know, story. Budget be damned.
Right.
You could tell the most epic buildings collapsing, and all the effects are right up here in your head. It's here in your imagination. If the effects suck, it's probably because you're mentally, you know, deficient, right?
Yeah.
So you could imagine the most epic thing in your head, and that was the fun part for me to tell that kind of like sort of a B movie sci-fi channel type of idea,
right?
But tell it in this epic scope, you know,
have like a World War Z budget,
right? Yeah, exactly. yeah, I mean, this would be a really expensive movie to make if. And it's sort of on the way there. I can't really say anything, but there's a big producer reading it.
Ooh.
Like, not as big.
Yeah, wow.
Like, okay.
Jerry Bruckheimer, you guys heard it here first.
Michael Bay.
I didn't say that. But
that'd
maybe.
That'd be awesome. Come on then, too.
Yeah. I'm really excited about that.
A lot of stuff happening.
I've had a lot of good early buzz for it. You know, a lot of the blurbs are like, I mean, they're reviewers who have kind of looked at my stuff before, but this is the first time they've ever read anything of mine because they've just seen the movies. And a lot of people are like, wow, this is fucking epic. Like, and one reviewer, and this is great, and I don't like to blow myself, but he compared me to Robert Heinlein, and I'm like, wow, that's pretty great. I'm a big Heinlein fan.
Yeah, that's quite
so,
an honor.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So cool. You know, I wanted to do The Stand meets Jaws, meets fucking every disaster movie you could ever imagine, and I hope people like it.
Yeah.
Where's the book?
Where is
the book going to be sold?
It'll be available on Amazon.
Right on.
Hopefully, it'll be
in ebook and print form.
Yeah. Yeah, ebook and print form, and hopefully it'll be in Barnes & Noble. The thing is, Barnes & Noble is kind of weird for small print books. Like, it has to be out, and then there's like a 6 to 8 week process where they have to like vet it.
Okay.
So it probably won't be in there until maybe March or April.
Okay.
But
cool.
Hopefully it'll be available in stores, you know, later in the year.
That's awesome.
But yeah, so it's gonna be a very shark centric year for me, because right after
and then Shark Week comes out, and then
right, exactly, because I'll be shooting a movie in February, which is not shark related, but right after I finish that, I'll be writing the second book, which is Sharks of the Living Dead.
Nice.
And
awesome.
it continues the characters from the Sharkano, but introduces a virus that happened in the first book that, well, it's basically Sharks versus Zombies.
I'm 100%
awesome. good
Well, thank you so much for coming in, Jose.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Congrats for everything that's going on. We look forward to Mega Shark versus Mecha Shark and the Sharkano and Shark of the Living Dead books and whatever the, whatever the third one of the Sharkpocalypse.
I haven't announced it yet. I'll tell you off the air, but I haven't announced it yet. But it's the perfect completion to the trilogy.
Nice. Good. Well, thanks again for coming in. And,
thank you.
Good luck.
I appreciate it, guys.
All right. So let's dive in and talk a little about Godzilla versus Mothra. Mothra versus Godzilla, Godzilla versus the Thing.
Yeah,
there's lots of titles
for
this
movie.
That was
the first thing I noticed. I was like, this isn't Godzilla. I'm like, am I watching the right movie? Yeah.
Or the Japanese title, Mosura Tai Gojira.
Oh.
You have very good pronunciation.
You like that?
You have very good pronunciation. Yeah.
So this Godzilla versus Mothra, which we'll go by for our purposes, was made in 1964. It was a science fiction kaiju film produced by Toho, who did all the Godzilla movies and all the Godzilla versus movies and everything. This one was the fourth film in the Godzilla series. Not sure why we decided on this one as opposed to the original Godzilla, but. It seemed
it's
like
on
it,
Netflix.
Yeah, it was. It was well. The wheel decided. Let's be realistic.
It's true. We left it to fate.
Yeah, the fates decided. So this was the first film in the series where Toho began bringing in monsters from other productions of theirs. So apparently, they had a separate Mothra movie, or a separate movie featuring Mothra, and so this was kind of a mashup, having Godzilla fight Mothra. And it would continue later, that trend would continue with Rodan, and then Ghidorah, the three-headed monster, and so forth and so on. First off, let's tell everyone the premise of Godzilla versus Mothra.
Is there really?
Yeah.
I mean, there is.
Yeah, there is.
Kind of tsunami.
We've reviewed some shitty movies.
Yeah. This
one's not the most exciting.
But it pushes. It happens.
But for 1964, it was pretty impressive, I thought.
Yeah.
I thought... Production-wise, production value-wise, and those Japanese, they just do everything better.
I guess.
So basically, the premise is there's a storm, a big typhoon at the beginning of the movie.
Right.
And which, immediately made me think, like, oh my god, someone shut down Fukushima.
Too soon.
So after this giant storm, a giant egg washes up on a beach. And it looks like a big Easter egg.
Right.
It's a giant
It looks
egg.
Like a dome peeking out of, the ocean, like a bubble.
Right, right.
But it's really an egg.
And
they knew that immediately, apparently. Everyone in Japan just knew that there was a giant egg.
I mean, it did look like a giant egg.
Okay.
But it, the thing that everyone kept on comparing it to chicken eggs, which is like, well,
that one
egg,
guy who was, the egg guy the entire movie,
like
just eating an egg.
Yeah. He's like, yeah, you just multiply.
It's 7 million of these.
So there's a lot of argument and discussion over what to do with this egg, who's going to control this egg, and there's this greedy developer that basically is the one that kind of take over control by no democratic process. They're like, no, this is our egg.
Yeah, dibs.
And They put it on for public display and start charging money for people to see it. Right? Was that?
Yeah, because they thought it was going to hatch, but it takes quite a long time.
Right, and they built a giant incubator for it. And so this is basically the first half hour of the movie, and we don't see Godzilla at all yet.
I know. No. I was just thinking, where's Godzilla the whole time?
So they never really say why. Do they ever establish why Godzilla shows up?
No.
Well, it says in the plot on Wikipedia, a large meteor hurtles towards Earth, lands in the ocean, and awakens Godzilla.
Which I don't remember that ever happening.
So there was a weird
egg must have been like a meteor.
No.
No, there was that rock. So the movie opens with the tsunami.
Right.
And then...
That meteor that they find?
Yeah,
right.
The woman taking a photograph.
That must have hit the Earth, and it slowly awakens Godzilla. And at the same time, it causes the egg to come from the island because it kind of throws everything out of balance, I guess.
With those two little Japanese women with voices of angels. Yeah.
Yeah.
So we come to find out that the egg belongs to Mothra, right? It's essentially...
Is Mothra the island or the
No, Mothra's the bug, flying
But they call
bug.
It the thing.
Yes.
And then they interchange it with Mothra.
Right.
And it confused me.
Yes. I think it can. I think
it's because
I think it had to do with the English
the translation.
Dubbing of it because
that's what I was going to say. There's a lot of mistaken English being spoken or confusing English yeah. being spoken, because I feel like they're doing like a literal Japanese translation.
Right. So when the film opened in the United States, it was distributed by American International Pictures, and they released it in 1964, and they retitled it at that point, Godzilla vs. the Thing.
Okay.
And I think they wanted it they wanted it to be kind of more vague. So when, you know, we kind of be like, ooh, the Thing, that's mysterious. Because we have
no attachment to Mothra, whereas Japan, I guess.
Exactly. So I'm sure if you actually you actually knew how they were translating it, or how the actual Japanese was being spoken, they probably, because you can hear when they're singing that song, they say something that sounds like Mothra.
Yeah.
And so I think they are saying that, but they call it the Thing in the dubbing, the English dub.
Here's my other question. The English dubbing, the dubbing of the characters' dialogue. Some of the people sound British, or are trying to have like some kind of British accent, and some of them sound like they're either Americans or people speaking English but with a Japanese accent.
Right.
Or it's Japanese people speaking English with like a Japanese English accent. I can't tell. And it was bothering me because I can't tell.
That's my answer.
It was totally racist or not racist at all. Or not racist enough, if you will.
Right, exactly.
I think it was a little bit of everything. Yeah.
Okay.
I mean,
So 30 to 32 minutes into the movie, Godzilla finally emerges from the ocean. Meanwhile, there's these scientists.
No, not from the ocean. He like merges out of the sand. Like sand.
Oh yeah.
Like
weird.
You see, like I didn't even know what they were doing.
She was
there,
like, "I'm trying to shoot this area."
Oh
and,
yeah.
And
it was like an earthquake, and he like comes.
Yeah,
and
he just pops
like,
up. He's like, "What's up?"
Hi. Hey, no, like anytime they shot Godzilla like popping in out of somewhere, because it's like just a person in a fucking Godzilla suit.
He just looks drunk all the time.
He was just like, yeah, he always looks like, hey, y'all, how's it going, y'all?
Oh, hi.
Godzilla, y'all.
And so Godzilla shows up and starts wreaking fucking havoc on Tokyo, as he does.
Yeah.
As his
a lot
customary.
Of it seemed like he was just tripping into
He
things.
Was so clumsy.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's he wasn't like, he gets his tail caught in the fucking tower.
Yeah,
like,
he wasn't like
he
outwardly trying to like destroy
it.
He just did.
I mean, he's a big fucking lizard. I'm sure it's hard to avoid, you know, skyscrapers and power plants and power lines and stuff.
Yeah, but I just feel like he was more like, you.
Well, the guy probably in that costume couldn't see anything.
Yeah, couldn't.
So
the eyes of Godzilla are like the funniest
the googly
thing ever.
Eyes
the googly eyes.
Yeah. So there is the group of humans that we're supposed to identify with as the good ones.
There's
that
like
are,
the newspaper writer,
the doctor.
Male protagonist, the female protagonist is the newspaper photographer.
Yeah.
Then there's the egg guy.
Yeah, the egg doctor guy, the scientist.
Who's always eating eggs, right?
Oh,
no,
that
that's,
the egg doctor?
Oh, that's a different
guy? No,
that
guy
who
works
in
the newspaper,
too, yeah.
I hate to say it, but they all kind of look the same.
I know, I was going to... Okay, I'm glad you said it and not me.
That was our racism for this review.
But also there were like a lot of names being thrown around and I couldn't keep up with anybody.
Not a chance. There wasn't a chance I was going to be able to... I mean, I'll keep track of all those names.
Yeah.
But, so, essentially, they come across these little, like, sprightly Japanese...
Elf twins.
Twins, right?
Yeah, they're mini twins.
And they're from a planet?
No, they're from Mothra.
They're from the
Mothra,
island Mothra.
The island of Mothra.
Where the egg came from.
Where the egg came from.
Right.
Okay.
In the storm, the egg broke off of
And that's
soil.
Where all, like, the Native American Japanese...
Right.
Mothra
Do
people.
Japanese, like, natives dress like that, or is that just them being Native Americans? Because they all were dressed like different variations of, like, Sioux Indians or, like, Apaches.
What I love is how they were all so accepting. They're like, oh, yeah, the island Mothra, where they were doing the testings, all the mutations. Yeah, we know all about it. It's like...
Yeah. Oh, sure, there's an alien egg.
You let this all just kind of have, like, a giant egg, and you knew that there might be a giant monster in it, and you just were like, yeah, it's totally fine.
Yeah.
Just keep going. You're fine over there with their spears and things.
We need to go help them. No questions asked.
Yeah.
So, okay. So they are essentially, the main people are trying to get the egg back to Mothra, right? Because they know
the evil corporation. Because
they know shit's gonna go down,
right?
Based on what these little broads are singing about. That,
and so the plan they come up with is if they can ask Mothra the Thing,
right,
to fight Godzilla, in order to, so they can at least save people, save the world in the sense, because Godzilla's just going to wreak so much havoc, and then try to get the, and then they'll get the egg back to them.
Okay.
Right. They didn't help them initially by getting the egg back when the elves asked for it. Now Godzilla's fucking shit up, so they're like, I know, we'll go ask the Mothra people to help us, even though we didn't help them. And that's exactly what Mothra's people said. But then they're like, no, we'll return the egg if you help us.
Yeah, then the Asian girl has a really long monologue where she calls it, like, just like, we're human people.
Oh, right.
Blah-de-blah-blah.
Yeah. I'm going to talk like every other actress from the 1960s.
So Godzilla and Mothra
go at it.
Fight.
Go at it.
Kind of.
I kind of like that fight.
Oh, the fight was funny because when Mothra was pulling Godzilla and it was just obviously like two like toys, it was the funniest
the
thing
shot
ever.
Of like his tail like flicking and Mothra trying to grab it just seemed like they literally were trying and over until somehow Mothra grabbed it and it was like, yay!
Get that? Did you get it?
We did it!
Now shoot that five times.
And Godzilla eventually beats Mothra, kills Mothra.
Yeah, it's kind of,
you know. Mothra is like already weak in a weakened
state. Mothra was
state,
dying anyway.
Yeah.
And like the physical exertion, and then like she
got
released,
fucking nailed
like,
with the
freeze. She released some like
toxic
thing, but then Godzilla had the fire breathing laser thing that he had that also lit up. I thought that was cool. It lit up like his back scales when he was like,
oh yeah, that was,
I don't know
cool.
if that was on purpose or what.
Oh,
but
that's
it was cool.
On purpose.
Oh shit. But yeah, I just thought the whole fight was super funny, and like the little tanks that were like driving.
Anytime
there's
toys.
Miniatures, I'm in.
Absolutely. So cute and fun, but it really wasn't that cute or fun. It was just kind of a boring movie.
Jeff's still bored
already.
Of it.
Sorry.
Just
talking
I'm,
about
I'm,
it's boring.
I'm fighting my cold. So.
So here's where the movie starts getting a little weird for me.
Okay. This might have been when I fell asleep.
When the larvae get involved.
Yes.
When
the
egg hatches.
The egg hatches, two larvae come out, which is exciting because it's
unexpected.
You're twinsies.
Yay.
And so I guess basically Godzilla starts like trucking it to the ocean because I think he's headed towards the island. It felt like that's
he's
where
he's
going.
He's going to like an island where there's like kids on it. Like, is a school island or what was that?
I don't know. He's just
oh yeah, where they had to like rescue all the kids.
Yeah,
from.
The
kids.
Old Asian dudes like
some
the children.
Island. Yeah.
Yeah, and so the
By the way, a lot of Japanese like Hitler mustaches in this movie. Did anybody else know that? Like very, very tiny little like close
were
to
there?
The nostrils.
Oh,
yeah,
I really? Don't remember. Oh boy.
Anyway,
yes.
So yeah, the larvae fight.
Do they? I don't remember.
They,
oh, they like
they spray jizz.
Like a,
they spray the
like
spider silk.
Wed jizz.
The spider silk, which wraps them up.
Oh.
And I actually it was pretty funny to me because it's like it's just a hand puppet. You can see.
Yeah.
And they're like, every time, like, Godzilla, like, firing a shit, like, the little puppet's, like, ducking behind shit.
Oh, no,
it's
you
like,
don't.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I was like, that's cool.
You can't catch me.
And they make Godzilla look pretty stupid.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, Godzilla gets pretty fucked up with the electricity, which doesn't kill him.
Yeah, right.
I mean, he takes a lot of damage, and, you know, I think a lot of it's his own fault.
Yeah.
If he was a little bit, you know,
just nicer.
Not so,
yeah, why can't he just be a nice guy?
Isn't
why is
there,
he so
aren't
angry?
There, I'm not a huge Godzilla like movie watcher, but aren't there somewhere he protects them?
I thought so. I thought he was like a protector of Tokyo in certain movies.
He comes back where he, like the, some other movies, he's the protector and he saves them.
He's seen the error of his ways, you guys, and just wants to make amends. Like,
Maybe when he has baby Godzilla, that one.
Oh, what?
Yeah, there's a baby Godzilla too.
I'm on board with that. This is where I fell asleep. So they wrapped him in the web, whatever, and then what happens?
He gets like cocooned essentially in the webbing and falls into the water
and just
drowns.
So basically,
sinks
open
to the
for
bottom.
A sequel.
Like, yeah. Okay. Yeah.
And then there was there a sequel?
There were more. 30, I don't know if there was. I don't think there was another Mothra. But there were, I mean, there was Godzilla.
More, there were more Godzilla.
Godzilla versus Rodan, and Godzilla versus
Rodan,
Mechagodzilla.
Like the writer. Who's Rodan? The composer?
I don't know.
Isn't there a Rodan?
Gauguin? Is that who you're thinking of? The
Maybe
painter?
Maybe Gauguin. No, there is a Rodan. call us in, guys, and let us know.
You're getting too fucking highfalutin and classic for this podcast. We're talking
so
about Godzilla.
Godzilla.
So it leaves it open. And there were many more leading up to the terrible 1998 Matthew Broderick.
Oh, that's movie. Right. But there's the new one coming out that looks pretty promising. There is the new one,
and it does look pretty cool. So I don't. There's not much to say about this movie. It was kind of like it was
a little slow, but it was slow.
It was you know, not a good one to watch if you are sleepy, which I think all of us were when we watched it.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Maybe watch it with your friends, make fun of things, and you know, just don't have any moths around. It might anger.
It didn't really look like a moth.
It didn't. No, it looked like a weird, creepy butterfly.
Bee, sort of, too. Yeah, caterpillary, yeah.
Yeah.
It was very sweet. I don't know.
I felt bad for Mothra when Godzilla was kicking his ass. I felt very...
He came to help and, like, was already in a weakened state, and they hadn't even done anything for them yet.
Yeah, and but then I felt bad for Godzilla when he was getting the nets, like, dropped on him and shit. I was like, oh, no, Godzilla. I just have a lot of sympathy for giant monster creatures, apparently. So,
yeah.
There you have it. Godzilla versus Mothra on streaming Netflix. Check it out. It is a classic of the kind of cult movie.
Minutes, yeah, it's short. We couldn't even last that long, but hey, prove us wrong, guys.
So that's going to about do it for this episode of the podcast. We are going to, on the next episode, we are going to be doing our special Love is in the Air Valentine's Day episode.
Yay.
And we will be reviewing Valentine's Day, directed by Gary Marshall and starring every actor and actress that needed a paycheck, apparently.
Yeah.
Or just works in Hollywood.
Who was moderately relevant or super famous in 2010.
Yes, exactly. So until then, thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.
Later.